Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Brandon Woodruff. This is the Small Business Podcast, where every week I interview a different small business owner and ask them the questions that matter and that you can just take their answers and apply it to your business. On today's episode, I had Michael Lee, and it was just a really awesome interview. I'm excited for you to hear everything he had to say. I haven't had an accountant on before, and it was just really just a new experience, a really cool conversation. Also, I am still running an online group where I lead virtual workouts via Zoom, record them, send them out for anyone who can't be there live, chat, and it's going really well. I've also got one-on-one coaching, so if you're curious about online coaching, if you're kind of stuck, the coronavirus seems to have affected different people different ways. Some people were in a fitness routine and are now struggling. Other people did not have a fitness routine and have recently gotten into one. And other people fall somewhere in the middle. So if you need help in any of that, just shoot me a text, 251-635-8055, and I am happy and excited to help. Let me know what you think of this episode. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Small Business Podcast. I have with me Michael Lee today. Michael, why don't you go ahead and just introduce yourself? Tell us about your companies and what you do, man. Just go ahead and say whatever you want about yourself.
Hey, thanks, Brandon, for having me on. My name is Michael Lee, and I live in Burlington, Vermont, northeast part of the country, for those of you who don't know where Vermont is. And I'm originally from Tempe, Arizona. I have a wife and three kids we're raising here, involved at a church locally here that I helped start a number of years ago. And I'm one of the volunteer pastors there. I also serial entrepreneur. So I, have a business called Reconciled, I started about 4.5 years ago, and we focus on providing, small businesses, startups and entrepreneurs, accounting services that would normally be done in-house. So things like bookkeeping, payroll, processing, accounts receivable, accounts payable, paying bills, invoicing customers, customer collections, financial statements, things like that. And we also do financial advisory services for those same customers, helping them both manage their money as well as understand how to make decisions that are right for their business. So Reconciled's in this kind of interesting online accounting world of accounting services. So I've been fortunate to grow that. I've got 28 employees spread throughout 9 states. We all work from home. We've been working from home before it became popular, and having a lot of fun doing that, and primarily, serving small business customers. I also have 2 other startups, one that I'm a silent partner on called Humanly, which is focused on providing HR services on an outsourced basis. So very similar model to Reconciled, but focused on HR. Recently started a financial reporting application called Sazable. You can go to getsazable.com. And if you are in the recurring revenue space, like a SaaS software company or a company that has memberships or monthly fixed revenue on a recurring basis, you can go to Sazable and get those metrics, those recurring revenue metrics, easily in an easy format to read right out of your accounting system into our dashboard. So I'm super active as an entrepreneur, super active as a dad, as a husband, and as a church leader. So I'd love to be on and talk about anything with you, Brandon.
Yeah. Yeah. Glad to have you, man. That's awesome. So tell us, how you got into being an entrepreneur to begin with. Like, have you always kind of known you were entrepreneurial, or did you kind of, what were you doing beforehand? Like, what led you starting your businesses? Give us a little of your background.
Yeah. So I was born and raised in Arizona. I was born to Cambodian, my parents are Cambodian refugees. So they came over in early 1980s to Arizona, and I was born a few months after they came. So my mom was pregnant with me. And I watched them, me and my siblings watched our parents basically make something out of nothing. They came with nothing, and they started, I guess, very much so like the American dream story, right? That story of hard work, and they had to figure it out. They didn't know English, and they just had to figure out life. And they had a lot of support. They had a lot of support from a local church in Arizona. They had a support of the other Cambodians that had come, support of really, really amazing American neighbors that were willing to help. And so we watched our parents do that. And so both my parents were entrepreneurs growing up. Awesome. And then when I got into college, I remember when I don't know if you're old enough to remember when the Palm Pilots were out. Those were the first smartphones before smartphones were real.
Yeah.
So no one really had them, right? Yeah. Only like nerds and geeks had a Palm Pilot. During that time, everybody had like really small, thin Motorola Razr phones. Mm-hmm. So smartphones were not like popular. Only nerds had them. So I was a nerd. I was a geek in college, studying business. And so I realized that when these smartphones became, you know, cell phones, that there would be this convergence of the internet and cellular technology. And so my first company was developing apps for the Palm Pilots, for those early smartphones. And so me and a high school buddy of mine that's a programmer, we started doing that together. We did that for 2 years during college. Wow. I even dropped out of college for a year because I thought that it was going to end up becoming a full-time thing and take over. And for a while it was. But then, you know, we both decided we want to go back and finish college. So that was our first foray into it. We went back to college and I actually started the first entrepreneurship club at Arizona State when I was in college. Oh, so that was kind of my first foray into entrepreneurship, was in college between, you know, 19 and 20, in my early 20s. Majored in, you know, business and accounting. So when I got out, I started doing, I had been doing accounting works early on, like through college. And then when I got out, I started doing more formal accounting work. And it wasn't until I moved to Vermont in 2011, after being here for a number of years, I realized, okay, this whole accounting service area, there's a lot of room for disruption and innovation. So that's when the concept of Reconciled came to be in the summer of 2015, and spent the summer kind of thinking through the concept of Reconciled and how we could help small business owners. Because every time I met with a small business owner, like yourself, I just noticed one of the areas that were just a big struggle is the bookkeeping. You know, small business owners like hate bookkeeping. They forget to invoice their customers or bill their customers for the work they mm-hmm. did. They forget to collect on payment. They feel like they're bad for even asking for money sometimes. Yeah. And I'm like, you're a business owner. That's what you have to charge your customers, you know, and then keeping track of their expenses. And if you were, you know, like many small business owners, if they were already not disciplined with their own personal finances, that wasn't going to all of a sudden become, you know, a discipline in their business. So we set out to make that process a lot more easy and a lot more efficient. And that's how Reconciled was born.
Man, that's awesome. And what year was that you started Reconciled?
So that was the end of summer 2015. That was August 2015.
Okay. So about 5 years in. Mm-hmm. Cool. Man. All right. So let's say from the time you started Reconciled to now, what would you say have been one or two of like the largest kind of like struggles and hurdles you've had to overcome like in your business?
Yeah, I think the first one is getting if you don't come from a natural sales background, right? I studied accounting and business, right? So I didn't consider myself a salesperson. If you don't consider that, then, you know, that could be a hurdle, is like, how do you start selling? How do you get the word out? And so that's the first hurdle, is not being afraid to get the word out and reminding yourself that no one, basically, I tell this to my clients, no one cares about you. No one cares that you exist. No one knows you exist. No one will remember you exist. Hmm. So even after you tell them what you do, there is so much that your potential customer is running through their minds about, like in life, they're going to forget they talked to you the moment they leave that conversation.
Yeah.
So until they sign on the dotted line, don't ever assume a customer is thinking about you or knows about you until they sign on the dotted line and wants to work with you. And so it's the fear of, you have to get over that. You have to get over the fact that you're going to get a lot of no's until you get a yes. And you get and then once you get a yes, you start seeing patterns of why people are saying yes. So it's that sales process I had to get over.
Yeah.
Once I figured that out, that took a little bit of time and realized we were providing a service to the right people and that there were certain people that really resonated with it. Then it was getting to that first million dollars of revenue. And that, you know, that's the hardest thing. Most businesses, they can't get there. It's really hard.
Yeah.
Cause it takes a lot of time. And so the first couple of years of the business, man, it was a lot of work and a lot of late nights. So you have to have, if you're married and you have kids, you have to have a supportive spouse and you gotta have understanding kids. Your free time is the business. I mean, if you really are trying to scale it. Mm. So that was probably the second hurdle, is like getting to that first million in revenue was definitely challenging.
Yeah, man, I totally identify with the sales thing. I mean, you would think even like with like fitness coaching and personal training, sales is a big piece of it. And like, that's obvious to everybody, like except me apparently, because I knew it was a big part, but man, I am not good. Like I can sell something when I believe in it, like naturally, like just sharing, you know, but my struggle was very much the things you just said, like, you know, I can get on a 30-minute consult call with somebody, talk through all their fitness goals, get that, like, I'm fine with it now, but when I first started, get to the point where, like, I had to pitch my prices, you know, now I have it where they know the prices going in and everything like that, but get to the end where I had to pitch my prices, ask for them to commit, and dude, so many times I would just flake out, like, I'd be like, you know, I had 250 in my head, like 250 a month or something. And I'd be like, 150, you know, like, and I would just kind of freak out. And
you start reducing your value, right?
Yes,
you
just absolutely. Like, Because you're just like, you start second guessing yourself. And oh man, yeah, I'm, and also I think the kids, my wife and kids thing, man, if my wife was not incredibly supportive, you know, there's no way we could, no way I could pull this off married. So yeah, man, that's so awesome. So let's get into kind of some of the specifics of your business. So I know you've got a couple of businesses, but let's just focus on this one for now. What mm-hmm. who would you say are, what's kind of like your target audience? Who's like the perfect avatar, target client for you?
Yeah, it's probably a customer doing around $1 million a year in revenue, more or less, you know, 750 to 1.25 million in revenue. They've got half a dozen employees or maybe 10 employees or less, something like that. And they need accounting services. They can't really hire or can't afford a full-time bookkeeper. They don't have enough work for that, but they need solid accounting. When you get to that size, you need real numbers that support a solid tax return. So that's the target. And then we're really concentrated on e-commerce companies, and professional services, digital marketing agencies, alcohol and breweries, and SaaS companies. That's kind of the top five concentrations we have. We really don't work with a lot of restaurants or retail stores. Really any companies that have like high volume and low margins, we don't really focus on. There's other services providers that do that, and they know those industries better. We're not that kind of firm. We're not a good fit for a lot of those. So we tend to not market to them, but we do get inquiries from them. We just don't market to them. Yeah.
So you get inquiries from them and then shut them down.
Yeah. Well, usually at the end of the day, like, because we know where we are, we sit in the competitive landscape. We end up being usually too expensive for most mom and pop restaurants, retail stores, small, you know, really small operations. Because we're at an average price point that tends to be sometimes double or triple what our competitors charge. Gotcha. And it's because we really believe in the service that we're providing and the team members we have. And so, we're really in more serving the, what I would call the new economy or the growing economy businesses. Mm-hmm. And we've been very fortunate during the past 3 to 6 months still to be doing very well, even during this time. So,
yeah. Yeah. Side note here, have you guys had to kind of pivot in any major ways as a result of the pandemic, or sounds like you were, you know, already working from home and everything, were much more prepared than most, but.
Yeah, we were fortunate. We were very prepared. You know, not that we haven't had any impact. We've had some, but like definitely not compared to what the restaurant or retail industry has had to suffer under. So being already working from home and ready, being online, having a team, you know, across the country, having clients spread out across the country, having our revenue diversified and not concentrated in just one state. Mm. I mean, I can't imagine if all my customers were only in New York, only California, where they just shut down, I would be hurting, you know, yeah. Or if my employees were only in those states and they were impacted by COVID. So, you know, we were all impacted by the shutdown and by the virus in some way or another, but we've been very fortunate and have continued to grow revenue, which has been awesome.
Yeah. That's great, man. Congratulations on that. Yeah. So getting into the marketing piece, I know you said, you know, you kind of shared who you market to, but what is your marketing look like? How do new potential clients find out about you?
Yeah. So, you know, in the accounting profession, most firm owners and most accountants, they are very traditional in their marketing approach. It's all networking, right?
Yeah.
They get referrals from friends, and there's always a high demand for accounting services, mm-hmm. whether it's tax or bookkeeping or whatever, or audits. So, you know, I might be working with somebody like you, and then you have five friends that are also entrepreneurs, and they say, hey, who are you working with for taxes? And you tell them. And generally, you don't go online to search. You generally aren't like going to Google for that. Only a few people do that. And all very similar to how you find a doctor or a bank. You don't generally Google for that. You ask around, right? Yeah. And I would call it the high fidelity, like the handful of high fidelity services where you really want a trusted referral. Mm-hmm. That's the traditional way accounts. When I went out, I of course did those methods, but then I wanted to find the methods that accounts weren't willing to touch, because those avenues were more like, what are software companies doing? What are technology companies doing to reach customers? And if you look at what they're doing, they're using more new economy marketing approaches, right? Inbound marketing, email marketing, sometimes even phone cold calling. Like some of the largest players that still continue to grow, they do cold calling, and people don't realize that. Cold calling is still used by a ton of tech companies, which is like boggles my mind, right? Mm. But it's effective because it's effective. It works. So we started with email marketing. We stumbled upon it in 2016 or 17, like not too long after we started. And I've been a huge email marketing advocate for cold outreach, reaching out to customers that haven't heard about us, targeting small business owners, CEOs, letting them know what online bookkeeping is. What is it? Like, it's not Sally coming to your office. It's all done remotely through using technology. And so, you know, obviously we had to do the hard work of convincing them, not only are we not local to you, we're going to do the work remotely, but you're going to hand over the keys to your finances.
Yeah.
So you're going to trust us, right?
Someone
so
you all haven't seen. That, yeah.
Yeah. Something you haven't seen. So, you know, but I knew if we articulated correctly in the value, most of us are so used to buying stuff online anyways. Right. And the fact that most of us interact with our bank online, I was like, okay, if they can put us in the realm of bank or like a service like that, then they won't be as scary to say, yeah, all the finances are online. You interact with us online. So that's what we set about doing in our brand as we did our email marketing. And when's the last time you got an email from an accountant? Never. Like, you just don't. Yeah, you don't get emails. You know, you don't get sold by accountants that way. So our target that we want to work with are tech savvier. And to know that they respond to an email and say, oh, this accountant's more tech savvy. They're email marketing and not, I'm not meeting them through my dad, you know?
Like, yeah.
They're, you know, so I think that was really helpful too with our marketing approach.
That's awesome. So you do get some referral and word of mouth, but also you take a bit of an unconventional approach in your field, email marketing.
Yeah.
You still use that pretty heavily.
Oh yeah, email marketing is still big. It's probably one of our biggest growth engines is email marketing. And the reality is, you know, I recommend this to anybody and the listeners, don't do the same sales marketing methodology your whole industry does, especially if it's crowded, if it's a crowded space. So you got to stand out, right? Yeah. And so if your industry doesn't do video inside an email, do video inside an email. If your industry doesn't do cold calling, do cold calling. If your industry doesn't do door knocking, go do door knocking. Mm-hmm. Like, there are other methods of sales that, because otherwise you're just going to be another person competing and you're not differentiating how you're reaching customers.
Yeah.
Or your target customer, especially, you know, maybe your target customer are seniors at home who are tech savvy, but they're not going to find you. You got to go find them. Well, they're probably going to answer a phone call or get a knock on the door that they're going to rather do than, I'm going to go search on Facebook for the best videos, right?
Yeah.
Seniors aren't going to do that.
Right.
Versus like a millennial, yeah, they're going to search for you. They don't want to hear from you. Like, so they're going to search for you. And if they like what they see, then they're going to engage you. And that's where like inbounds the key methodology.
Yeah.
Right? I think you want to think through the approach of your target customer. Where are they listening? Where are they watching? Who are they listening to? And then go do the thing that your industry does not do.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, so for me, we were talking a little beforehand. I mean, before I went self-employed, I was a payroll specialist. And then I was actually, I didn't tell you this. I was in recruiting and sales specifically for people in the accounting field. So like I was recruiting accountants, bookkeepers, accounts receivable, accounts payable specialist, payroll specialist, billing specialist, all of that. And so I totally see exactly what you're saying. I mean, like, you know, those companies marketing wise and things like that seem to handle things pretty much the same way. I will fully admit I was awful at sales in that job. It's funny because I was like, it was a two-sided job. It was recruiting. It was sales. And I was probably the best recruiter they had and the worst salesperson they had. Because like I love the recruiting. I love bringing people in, interviewing them, figuring out their stuff. I'm a very like list oriented, bullet point oriented person. So I had a blurb about every person and I could just shoot them, like snipe them to the other like salespeople and be like, yep, this is the person for this one. This is the person for this one. But when it came to like going and just like pitching a sales pitch of why we should like a company should let us staff, you know, their accountants, man, I was just like, I don't care about this, man. You know, like that was my problem. Like, and so I'm much, much better off in a self-employed, profession of my choice, not something I just kind of wound up in. But I will say like, you know, that was the sales, like the strategies that I did learn and use that actually were effective, the few times that they were the ones that were not really like what everybody else was doing. It was me just like sending out a blast email and being like to all the companies and being just like, hey, let me bring you like a bunch of donuts. Like, just let me come and just, I'll bring you donuts and you just give me like 5 minutes just to talk to you. You know what I mean? And so like when you come with food, people are already happy to like that you were there, you know, versus just some dude coming to take up their time. So yeah, man, that's so awesome.
Yeah, that's funny.
Coming into kind of like, this is where I usually ask about content and social media and all of that. I know you've already hit on the email marketing piece. Do you do much as far as like social media content or anything like that?
We do some social media, but our primary is email. And then we do a lot of video like webinars where mm-hmm. we invite okay. customers to webinars. And that gets a lot of traction. You know, we usually have well over 100 people that sign up, you know, for those webinars, which is really good for us since we're kind of newer to the webinar game. And we started doing webinars probably, you know, at the beginning of COVID. And then I've done a few outside of Reconciled where I'm speaking at industry events and are speaking on behalf of other business partners. So I've done speaking across the industry and in other places. Email marketing continues to be kind of the primary. And then some blogging as well.
Okay. Yeah. Is that you doing the blogging or is it somebody else in the company?
So we have, you know, I believe in outsourcing everything. Yeah. So that you're not, you know, strengthened. So we have, when the blogging, we have a team that does that.
That's awesome. Cool, man. So let's get into just kind of like your sales process. So you've already, you know, you've marketed and you've got a potential clients out there. They respond in whatever way. And you kind of have them like on the line, you know, how do you take somebody from a potential client to a client? What does that process look like?
Yeah. So once they respond or they're referred to us, they do a 30-minute phone call with one of our sales team members. We have two sales team members, a director of revenue, and then somebody that works for him. Mm. They do the 30-minute call, and then we get a proposal out to them. I mean, it's very simple. The proposal will like, you know, have the list of services they've requested, what the monthly fee is going to be. They sign the proposal, and we charge on a fixed monthly fee every month. So we have a recurring revenue model. They sign that, and then they sign up. The moment they sign, they get an immediately email that lets them book an onboarding appointment with our onboarding team. And then they start the process. So, you know, usually a customer right now for June, sometimes they'll want to actually start this month, but most of the time they're in the process of, you know, vetting accounting services, and they're trying to decide, do they go with us? Do they go with a local bookkeeper in town? Do they go with, you know, their girlfriend that's offered to do the accounting? Which do they do? So we'll often send a proposal that starts for July 1st, you know, that if we're talking to a prospect now, and then they'll start. And then, you know, as a July approaches, we'll get them ready for that onboarding appointment and begin the work. So it's a fairly simple process. Yeah.
I love the system, and I've seen, you know, like what I've found just in interviewing and for the show and just talking with other small business owners is the ones who seem to like have a consistent flow of clients are the ones who have those kind of systems like that in place. You know what I mean? Like that, and they can sign the clients rather, take them from potential client to client. They have a solid system in place. It took me a while to get one in place, but I saw things get a lot more smooth once it's just kind of like, all right, they go through this funnel, you know, this pipeline, they do this, then they do this, then they do this. And that's really awesome, man. So when in getting into kind of client retention, what makes people stick around? Like once they've signed up and you guys have, you know, worked with them, what makes them stick around as clients for you? What are some of the big kind of values of your company, things that make them want to stick around?
Yeah, I think the big part is the customer experience. So I tell my team and the whole company knows, I believe we have 2 weeks to 30 days to impress the customer. And that'll basically mark their experience for the rest of the time with us. Mm. Our estimate is the average customer will spend 2 to 3 years with us, somewhere around there. Let's call it 2.5 years. Average customer is going to spend 2.5 years with us. And because most people don't want to switch bookkeeping services or bookkeepers than that. Right. So that 2.5 years is going to be marked by what was the first 2 weeks to 30 days like? What was it like? So what can we do to wow them? Yeah. What can we do to make the experience like going to Disneyland? You know, you're working with an accounting firm. So we don't have that high of a bar to impress them because all the other competitors are not impressing them. Right.
Yeah.
So what is it? So we do little things. And after the first 3 days, we send a handwritten note thanking them for joining us. Right.
Cool.
In the onboarding experience, they get a really, you know, really welcoming person who like to them is like, wow, this is not a normal accountant, right? They get a very warm, welcoming person that walks them through the process of signing up with us and the access we need to their accounts and their accounting system. They get assigned to the bookkeeping staff that we have internal as our team for our team. And those are going to be the ones that are going to be their main point of contact and do all their accounting work. And then they get follow-up. And then we do a check-in with them. So it's like all those components, all the touch points.
Yeah.
You know, and I argue as long as your experience is positive and the communication is regular, most people don't expect excellence. They expect good enough. Yeah. They're paying for, you know, depending on what they're paying, they're paying for you to deliver a basic service. Mm-hmm. And as long as if you do anything over the top of that is icing on the cake.
Yeah.
But you have to basically make it feel good. And so, of course, we do something that requires to be accurate, accounting. We need to be accurate. But we don't need to be anal, right? We need to be accurate without being anal. And most accountants are anal.
Yeah.
So we try to be accurate, but give, you know, realistic, actionable advice. And we also want the books to be good enough to pass muster. And then let them experience us. So let them experience an accounting service that they've not experienced before. That's the goal. So how do you create that experience? And that's what marks it, I think, keeps people with us.
That's awesome, man. It amazes me that like in an age that we're in where, you know, there's so many companies and there's so many, you know, so many companies with high visibility now, like on the internet, and people can just go leave a review wherever they want. Like, it amazes me that so many companies still are very much just kind of like good enough. You know what I mean? Like, so anytime I sign up with a company, you know, it's like you said, I mean, because I have my own business, I do kind of, I think sometimes I'm a little spoiled and I do expect, like high level of customer service from companies because when somebody does that though, like when I'm, you know, when I sign up with somebody and I get like the first time Amazon like messed up an order for me and I reached out and they were just like, oh, refund, you keep it. I was just like, what? You
know? Blown away, huh?
Yeah. And I mean, so to, you know, to get a thank you card from your accountant, something like that, man, that would make me stick around for sure. So that's awesome. So let's get into the planning piece. What does kind of like planning for the future look like for your company? You know, I know, you know, a lot of business owners have kind of like a 5-year plan. Some are more like, you know, let's just take it a year at a time and see what happens. What does kind of planning for the future look like for you?
Yeah. So I have a leadership team. And so I meet with them on a quarterly basis to a monthly basis and then a quarterly basis to talk through our plan. We follow the traction methodology. So we've gone through that methodology together. So we have quarterly rocks that we establish as a team that we're going to go after. And then we run our meetings in the traction format, where we're really focused on actionable items and issues that we can address together. And then every, in the middle of the year, we basically do a review of the first half of the year and plan for the second half of the year. Mm-hmm. And then we do an end of the year review and plan for the following year. So it's very much a rhythm. There's just a kind of rhythm to it, and it makes sense and makes sense to people, like this just kind of common rhythm. And so that's kind of what the planning looks like. And we adjust when we need to. I'm not rigid to, hey, we planned this in January and even if there's like, you know, there's always a variety of things that happen. So COVID-19 hits, you got to make an adjustment. You got to make an adjustment to what you're projecting, because the reality is most of the time you are going to be impacted.
Yeah.
So that's been really, really helpful for us to kind of look at it that way.
Cool. Yeah. I heard somebody recently say, like, you know, planning versus strategy, like a plan is very contingent upon, like, if this happens, then this happens and this mm-hmm. happens. But if one thing doesn't go right, then the rest kind of falls down and you have to scrap it all. But like a strategy mm-hmm. is like, this is kind of what we're going for. And, you know, just, you can make much quicker pivots, you know? So that's awesome, man. So I feel like you are in a good place to say it, because you've just come through probably the most challenging thing for just like companies at scale, like all companies, you know, in at least like my lifetime, I'd say. I don't know. I mean, I wasn't, you know, I was in, had just graduated high school in the 2008 crisis hit, but like, you know, I don't even know if that came close to this, you know, when it comes to affecting companies globally. So that's awesome. So this is a little bit more of like a really specific question, but what do you guys use to like take payments from your clients? So, you know, as a, you know, I always ask this question, but I'm particularly curious what you'll say since you are in accounting, like what kind of system, software, like how do you take
payments from your clients? There's two ways we take payments. The primary way is we have a practice management system called, or a contract system called Practice Ignition.
Okay.
And it's basically, it was made for accounting firms, but basically anybody that has contracts with customers that want to charge them on a monthly or quarterly basis or like a recurring basis, we use Practice Ignition for that. So it if I were to send you a customer agreement to work with us, you'd literally open up the email, click on the agreement, you'd look at it online, you'd put in your bank account or credit card information and click sign, and then that after that's done, that practice charging system takes over, Practice Ignition, it just takes over. And every month my customers are charged at the beginning of the month. So I know the beginning of month, pretty much most if not all my revenue for that month.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because we charge. And then the second one is we use QuickBooks Online to invoice customers if we're doing special projects that we haven't fixed priced for them. So we have like a, you know, hourly rate depending on the type of project that we'll charge, and then we'll invoice customers for that. And then QuickBooks Online allows our customers to pay us by credit card or by bank account online.
Cool. Man, that's awesome. Yeah, thanks for that. You know, I think everybody kind of seems to answer that question a bit differently. And I'm always curious, because it's one of those things that's, it's not big picture, but it is a big deal for the very reason that you said to begin with. Like, you know, a lot of times it's really easy for somebody like a small business owner, especially, to be kind of like, you know, focused on what their business actually does. And before you know it, they've forgotten to ask their clients for payment. You know what I mean? Like I've definitely done that in the past. And now that I have like a rhythm and a software helping me, that's awesome. So I'm always curious what people use. Going to kind of transition a little bit more as we kind of get near the end here, away from your business to you as the business person, a bit. So like, what do you kind of do to continually like improve yourself? You know, how do you as a person and as a businessman continue to kind of like grow and improve and get better and hone your craft? Like, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, you know, so first is I definitely always take an attitude of a learner to everything I do, whether that's with my faith or with my business. So, I'm in a monthly business group called Vistage, where I meet with at the first Thursday of every month. I meet with fellow business owners and key executives with different businesses in Vermont. So we meet monthly. We meet all day. I've been a part of that group for almost 6 years now, I think it's been. Yeah. And, you know, I pay to be a part of it. It's part of my own professional development, and it's not cheap. It's it's definitely worth, like, it definitely costs money. Yeah. And so I'm probably, you know, I probably have spent for the past 6 years or eight years, I've probably spent $20,000 to $30,000 a year in my own professional development every year.
Okay.
So whether that's being part of a business group, going to conferences, going to workshops, getting continuing education, investing in yourself, you know, investing in your own knowledge and growth in that is important. So, you know, conferences, meetups, things like that, I'm probably investing a ton of money on professional development every year, but the results are there, right? Like if I hadn't been a part of that group, I don't know if I would have started the business. I don't know if I would have had a group of people to bounce ideas off of to start it or learn from their failures and successes on their businesses. So I think a peer group is a big one for me. And then, you know, since being in the industry, there's other formal and informal peer groups in the accounting industry with other accounting firm owners that are like-minded and have a similar kind of business that I learned from. And so that's been really, really helpful as well. That way I'm able to keep myself, sharp on my entrepreneurial skills. And then I try to have a morning routine. It's probably like one of the bigger things.
That was my next question for you.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So like, you know, I try to get up early. I often spend time praying, reading the Bible, have a cup of coffee. And we try to get up before the kids are up, you know, so give myself a good 30 minutes to an hour of just time that's quiet and contemplative, and learn something, you know, kind of reflect inward, and get myself ready for the day. I usually, you know, it doesn't work when you open your device and kind of start reading the news. That doesn't help. No. So never recommend that. And I've definitely, you know, am prone to that, but, cause you want to just like get on with your day, but shortcutting introspection, I never feel like, oh, I'm glad I did that. I always feel like, oh, I regret doing that. I'm now distracted. So, but I try to, you know, as best as I can get that, you know, 30 minutes to an hour alone. And, you know, whether you're a person of faith or not, I recommend it for anybody. Like, it doesn't matter if you're a person of faith or not, because just getting your head straight for the day, owning that day from the beginning of the day, saying, I'm going to own this day. I'm not going to let it own me. And so that has always been a helpful process for me.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. So what does your routine outside of that look like? Outside of the get up early introspection, what kind of comes next before you get to like your full work day?
Yeah, so I have breakfast with the kid, you know, prep breakfast with and have that with the kids and the family, get ready, and then get to the office. Cool. And usually in the beginning of the day, I have 30 minutes to an hour. There's not a meeting scheduled. So I usually use that to take a look at my calendar and make sure that I can, you know, commit to all the meetings that I have scheduled or if I have to move anything around and then think through the process of the day, think through, okay, what am I going to tackle today? And a lot of the times, you know, because we run a virtual company, a lot of my day is just virtual meetings, a lot of virtual meetings, a lot of Slack, you know, a lot of email. And then there's, you know, a couple hours of deep work where I'm doing a financial statement, pro forma, or I'm maybe advising a customer, or I'm looking at a big deal for the business, a strategy issue. That's, you know, a big part, of it. And always try to take a break for lunch and in the middle of the day. And then, I try to end my day by 5 every single day so that I can be home for dinner. So nice. I rarely am not home for dinner, and I'm rarely not home for breakfast. It's pretty much almost those two things I try to protect, and then
try
to keep the time between 5 o'clock and the kids, you know, kids finally going to bed, try to keep that time sacred with the family, or engage, you know, we as a family will engage in activity together, either it's a small group or go volunteer somewhere or go out on a walk or something. And then after eight, if I don't, you know, either get time alone with my wife or I'll focus on more work, because my hobby is work. So focus on thinking about the next day, you know, and and as a serial entrepreneur, like most entrepreneurs, you know, it's when you're not at your current business that you, at night when you're thinking about the new idea all the time, and like it's deciding, okay, wait, no, I need, you know, what to focus on and really put your time in is really important.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. Let me ask a couple of quick questions and then we'll wrap it up. What, as you are, as someone who runs a company that's mainly online, you know, so for me as an online fitness coach, I do coach some people in person. Some things are about to happen where I'm about to start coaching even more people in person, but I primarily coach online. And a lot of times one of my biggest hurdles is, hey, this is what online coaching is. Cause people are like, well, isn't this like you're supposed to be here? You know? So like, that's a big, big part of my, sales process is explaining and helping someone understand what that is. And the best way I found to do that is like through that long call. So would you say the best way that you found to kind of convince people is through those, you know, those in-depth, like the 30-minute discussions that you mentioned, is that kind of your key way to help them understand that?
Yeah. To help. Yeah. You want to lay out your value proposition really clearly, right, in that call. And also, in all your marketing and branding. So if you pour in your marketing and branding, the reality that you provide this online, you know, use terms online, virtual, remote.
Yeah.
Bookkeeping, and that way they just know clearly we don't do work in person, and we're just not set up to. So, and why what we're offering is better. Yeah. You got to talk about it. It obviously has its downsides, but we're going to focus on the upsides, and we're going to focus why better. Well, when COVID-19 hits again, here we go. Like we can still serve you. We can still serve your needs. You don't have to worry about us compared to your competitors. So that's that. You want to lay out your value proposition.
Yeah.
And what I find too is that if you can come into every sales call focused on really great questions and letting your customer talk, and you know, usually it doesn't take a whole lot for my customers to just talk about themselves the whole time. Then really, if you can show yourself as a person that can listen really well and ask good questions, almost every single time I know I've landed that customer when I'm able to keep them doing that, you know. So that's, you know, that's really, really important. And we rarely, if ever, have to talk about pricing on a sales call. It just comes in the proposal. But, you know, we can tell pretty quickly, even at the end of a call, we can tell pretty quickly if a customer is going to sign on with us regardless of the price. And that's where you want the customer to be. They see your value and they're willing to pay for it regardless of what the price is. Within reason, of course. But,
right,
you know, but, you know, so that's where I feel like you got to continue to refine and hone your sales process and skills and questions that you ask. And then the questions you ask gives the perception to the customer that you know what you're talking about. And if you spend a sales call giving advice, you're selling at that moment, you know, unless the customer is asking for advice on the call, then that's different. Then the customer is basically acting as if you are their advisor now. And that's actually a great position to be in, you know? But it's oftentimes I see salespeople offering unsolicited sales advice or advice that the customer didn't ask for. You should just sit there and ask questions to the customer and figure out what do they really need, and then figure out how to sell what you have to offer to that need. And that's what's really important.
Absolutely, man. It's so funny to me how regardless of, that's one thing that's really struck me during this doing this podcast, just with different people in different fields. It doesn't matter what field you're in. Like, it's the same kind of deal. You know what I mean? Like, so many fitness coaches are just going to walk up and give unsolicited advice in the gym to somebody who just wants to go home, you know? So like, so that's, just two quick questions left. So, you mentioned, you know, how you mentioned earlier in the podcast, how you kind of, when you first start, like, you know, your wife being really understanding because, you know, you're so much time is going to the business, and then kind of wrapping it up at the end, you were talking about how now you kind of let you try to stop at five and just have family time. would you say that for the majority of small business owners, you can't really start there? Would you say that it's pretty difficult to start by just being like, all right, 5 o'clock, I'm done? Like, would you say that it's kind
of
hard?
That's hard. I mean, if your goal is to grow a business, like really grow it with employees, you know, and scale it and get it, you know, to $1 million or more, you got to put a lot of effort into it.
Yeah.
You got to put effort into it. If you're planning to grow like super slow and just organically grow and like you don't really have a goal of getting it to even equal your what salary you could get in a job, it's very hard to do that slowly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I tell people like it depends on what your growth goals are. It depends on what your purpose is with the business. If it's always going to be a side hustle, then it'll always be a side hustle, right?
Yeah.
If you treat something like a side hustle, it'll always be a side hustle.
Yeah.
Treat it like you want it to be a business that scales and lives, has a life of its own in the future. You got to treat it like, you got to treat it like a baby.
Yeah.
A baby always needs you. Baby always needs you there in the beginning. Right. Mm. So until they become self-sufficient, you got to treat it like a baby.
Yeah.
And then you got to get out of the way as an owner. Mm. At some point you hire a management team to run and to work with you. And you start stepping out of the way in key areas, and now it's really running on its own.
Right? Yeah.
So,
love it, man. I would say my favorite piece of business advice I've probably ever heard since I started this, and ironically, I can't remember who said it, but the biggest piece I've probably ever heard is start small, dream big, scale fast. Those three things together were like huge for me. In that I didn't have to start with, you know, by taking on massive amounts of debt. You know, I could start with what I had, but I could have clear goals and big dreams and then just aggressively move toward those. You know what I mean? And so for me, that usually looks like 14, 16 hour work days, but it pays off, you know? So, I mean, that's awesome advice, man. Last question here. Somebody comes up to you, and they want to know, but you can only give them one piece of advice, and there's somebody who's looking to start their own business, their own company. It doesn't have to be in your field, just somebody that you know, you run into somebody at a family reunion, at a coffee shop, and they're like, I want to start this business. What's the one biggest piece of advice you'd give them?
I'd say go talk to your potential customers first right now before you even start it. So just go talk to your potential customers and figure out whether the product or service you want to offer that they're willing to buy it.
Yeah.
So just start selling. And if you find enough customers that you're actually, you know, solving a real pain point, or you have a real product that they want or a service they want, start selling it. Otherwise, don't start with an imaginary customer and create imaginary service and then not talk to customers, right? You just need to talk to customers, and figure out if you're willing to talk to customers. Because if you're not, you got no point selling.
Yeah.
You got no point starting a business if you're not willing to talk to customers, including ones that'll say no to you or tell you that's a dumb idea or I've got a solution already that's way better than you and it's over there. So you got to go talk to customers.
Yeah. Love that, man. That's a new one. I haven't heard it, and that's really helpful. All right. So let's say anybody wants to find you. What would you like me to put in the show notes as like places that they can reach out, can find you? Where'd you like me to tag there?
Yeah. So I'm on LinkedIn. Just look Michael Lee, spelled L-Y, the last name, Michael Lee. Mm-hmm. So that's a way that a lot of people reach out to me. I'm also on Twitter as well, Michael _Lee_. You can also just shoot me an email, you know, off the Reconciled website, info@getreconciled.co, info@getreconciled.co. So.
Okay, cool. All right. Awesome. Michael, thanks a lot for your time, man. I really appreciate it. And it's been a really, really helpful discussion. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks, Brandon.
Hey, Brandon again. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed it, got anything from it, please tune back in and please share it with any other small business owners in your life.